Hello, everyone. My name is Elijah Davis, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, down south of the 12th Hour in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is July 9, 2016, or it is 8-6-2020. We will start our sacred service on this Sabbath day with a song entitled, His Eye is on the Sparrow. Why should I feel this fervor? Why should the shadows come? Why should my heart be lonely and long for heaven and home? When loss was my portion, my constant friend is He. His eye is on the sparrow, and oh, He watches me. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He watches me. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. For His eye is on the sparrow, and oh, He watches me. Let not your heart be troubled. His tender bed I hear, and all resting on His goodness, I lose my doubts and fears. Though by the path He leadeth, but one step I may see, His eye is on the sparrow. Oh, He watches me. His eye is on the sparrow, and oh, He watches me. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. His eye is on the sparrow, and oh, He watches me. Whenever I am tempted, whenever clouds arise, when songs give place to sighing, when hope within me dies, I draw the closer to Him. From care set me free. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He cares for me. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know He cares for me. I sing because I'm happy. I sing because I'm free. His eye is on the sparrow, and oh, He watches me. Okay, the two Babylons were in the book by Alexander Hislop, 1858, a Scottish minister of the Presbyterian Church, no less. Says we're on part two now of the two systems of the two Babylons. Now we'll do a little review from our last study. And we told you about Hillary Clinton. She's a figure that is a symbol of this mystery of Babylon woman today. And lo and behold, we have some footnotes that I had overlooked in my last study, where I was reading on page 6. And let's read about it a little bit. It says, for the age of Shem, that's the first son of Noah. See Genesis 11:10-11. According to this, Shem lived 502 years after the flood. That is according unto the Hebrews chronology till AC 1846. Okay, that makes sense. The flood took place about 1600 AC. Okay, for the age of Ninus, the husband of Semiramis, as stated in a former note, according to Eusebius, synchronized with that of Abraham, who was born B.C. 1996. It was only about 9 years, however, before the end of the reign of Ninus, that the birth of Abraham is said to have taken place. Okay. So it says, consequently, on this view, the reign of Ninus must have terminated according to the usual chronology about B.C. 1987. Clinton. Now here's this Clinton, of all things, here's a man named Clinton, who is of high authority in the chronology, places the reign of Ninus somewhere earlier in his Hellenistic. He makes his age to have been about B.C. 2182. All right. Semiramis is said to have survived her husband 42 years. Okay, whatever view, therefore, be adopted in regard to the age of Ninus, whether that of Eusebius or that at which Clinton and Layard have arrived, it is evident that Shem long survived both Ninus and his wife. Now keep in mind that Shem is the first son of Noah. He's the firstborn, and he has the righteous line. He has continued on the righteous line that was handed down from Adam through Seth and through Enoch and Noah. And now Abraham, and then Moses, and Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and then Moses, and David, and Yahshua. All right, it says, Shem alone survived both Ninus and his wife. Of course, this argument proceeds on the supposition of the correctness of the Hebrew chronology. For the conclusive evidence on that subject, see Appendix Note D. Now, this book was written back there in 1858, and you can tell by the typewritten print. And it was published in 1919, this book here, second edition. All right, so it says that when Shem was still alive, to rouse the minds of the faithful to rally around the banner for the truth and cause of Elohim, made it hazardous all at once and publicly to set up such a system as was inaugurated by the Babylonian queen. This is the Babylonian queen Semiramis, and she was a type of Hillary Rodham Clinton. We know from the statements in Job that among the patriarchal tribes that had nothing whatever to do with the Mosaic institution, but which adhered unto the pure faith of the patriarch. Idolatry in any shape was held to be a crime to be visited with the signal and summary punishment on the heads of those who practice it. Now, if that was that way then, it still is today, and the Bible backs that up. So you see now why the Adventists have come and gone off the scene. Because they never advanced with the unfolding of the scroll when it would unfold. The majority of them and their leaders would fight against it, and so this is why they had no other choice but to stay in an Egyptian Babylonian idolatry and practice it. They were born in it. When they were born in 1844, the Adventist was just being introduced to the world as coming out of the Dark Ages and embracing one grain of doctrine being restored at a time into that vessel of Ezekiel 4:9. And that was six grains of doctrine that had to be taught, the doctrine of faith and grace and baptism. And the Holy Spirit is a doctrine that had to be taught. And then the 23-day prophecy had to be taught. And then the seven-day Sabbath, that last but not least, had to be introduced as one of those doctrines. So the Adventists were very thin on a basket full of fruit, you know, so to speak. They just had six grains of doctrine in one vessel given to them by Ezekiel. And that's what they were promoting. That's all they needed to promote. As whatever those doctrines taught them, and no more, no less. So it says, let's continue to read. We're on page 7 now. If I beheld the sun, said Job, when it shined, or the moon walking in brightness, and my heart hath been secretly enticed, and my mouth has kissed my hand, this also were an iniquity, and to be punished by the judge. For I should have denied the Elohim that is above. Job 31:26-28. Now, if this was the case in Job's day, much more must it be have been the case at the earlier period when the mysteries were instituted. It was a matter, therefore, of necessity if the idolatry were to be brought in, and especially such foul idolatry as the Babylonian system contained in its bosom, that it should be done stealthily and in secret. Well, this is what Hillary Clinton, they have got her set up, and they're fast-forwarding her to the front of the line to be the next president of the United States, and they got Babylon, the riches of Babylon, behind her. All of Babylon that represents, that serves Babylon today, are behind her. Why? Because she says, I sit as a queen and I am no widow. This is true. She's got a real husband, Bill Clinton, and he's gone around the world the last 25 years making friends with kings of nations. And all of these people had any influence in Babylon, and he's promising them the world and the moon. And they are donating money into his coffers to make them filthy rich. But once they get to the head of the line and finally become president of the United States and the world, they're not going to be able to return any favors to these people that have given their money and given their positions, their seat. Because it's Satan, that's the one that actually had the power to do all this to those people, to give them this man that number 666, to give him his seat in authority. It says so in Revelation 13. He said, I think about verse 4 and 5. He said, even though introduced by the hand of power, it might have produced a revulsion, and violent attempts might have been made by the uncorrupted portion of mankind to put it down. So now here you have Donald Trump representing the moral majority, not only of this United States, but also of the whole world that's following him, that's falling in behind him, because they haven't been corrupted by this Babylonian system that most of the world has been corrupted by. And at all events, if it had appeared at once in all its hideousness, it would have alarmed the consciences of men and defeated the very object in view. That object was to bind all mankind in the blind and absolute submission unto a hierarchy entirely independent on the sovereign of Babylon. In the carrying out of this scheme, all knowledge, sacred and profane, came to be monopolized by the priesthood. Now the priesthood for the Catholic Church is your Jesuits. They're your priesthood. And these Jesuits are the ones that the Justice Department turned over the investigation of Hillary Clinton and her illegal emails to the FBI, which is all Jesuits, and they represent this priesthood. And it just so happened that the head of the FBI has been working with the Clintons for about 30 years in government and has given them a free pass several times along the line on their corruptness, but he was in a position to rule on it. Even as an FBI that has no jurisdiction whatsoever, but they allow him to do it anyway. Okay, so the Jesuits completely own the CIA and the FBI. So they can monopolize them. They can even monopolize what the Supreme Court tries to do. They can monopolize what the Congress and Senate tries to do. If they want go against it, they can monopolize against it and come away winners. Who dealt it out unto those who were initiated in the mysteries, exactly as they saw it. According, let's read this again. In the carrying out of this scheme, all knowledge, sacred and profane, came to be monopolized by the Jesuit order of the antipodal priesthood here of the Catholic Church that has taken over and completely own the FBI, and they own the CIA. The Jesuits own all of the secret services worldwide. They're in charge secretly. They're called the shadow government. And our government funds $80 billion a year for the secret services of this country. That's a lot of money. And then they come up before the year is over and say to the president, we need more money. We need more money because we got to expand our operations more, and if we don't get more money, we can't do that. Man, a lot. $80 billion, that's a lot of money. And then they need more money before the year is over. Okay. Who dealt it out unto those who were initiated in the mission? Exactly as they saw fit, according unto the interest of the grand system of the spiritual despotism they had to administer, might seem to require. Thus the people, wherever the Babylonian system spread, were bound neck and heel to the priest. Today that would interpret the Jesuit priest of the Catholic Church. For the priests were the only depositories of their religious knowledge. See? They say church and state separation in this country. That's what our government stands on. So here we have the Jesuit priests running our CIA and FBI, and making final rulings on high classified material, which is the highest priority that there is, and the safety of our country is make sure that their classified material don't go unprotected. And lo and behold, Hillary Clinton has completely destroyed that idea and that concept of any kind of safety at all, because everything that she had done as a 6 years as an attorney general, Secretary of State, I mean, running the war for Obama there in the Middle East, she has completely compromised our secret information, and the enemy has got everything that she's ever had transcripted on her email that she sent anywhere to anybody. And high classified material fell into the enemy's hands all around the world, and they have every bit of it. But we can't have access to it because the FBI won't let us have it. The Justice Department won't let us have it. Obama won't let us have it. They said it's classified information. It's too dangerous to let it out. The whole world has already got it. But they want to keep it hidden from the American people so they won't have to be brought to justice and account for their lies of the deceiving ways. For the priests were the only depository of religious knowledge. They only had the true tradition. Notice it says true tradition. Didn't say anything about the true laws of Moses, but they had the true tradition that was created by man in the place of the law, to take the place of the laws of Moses, by which the rites and symbols of the public religion could be interpreted. And without blind and implicit submission unto them, what was necessary for the salvation could not be known. Now compare this with the early history of the papacy and with its spirit and modus operandi throughout, and how exact was the coincidence? Was it in a period of patriarchal life that the corrupt system of the Babylonian mysteries began? It was in a period of still greater life that the unholy and unscriptural system commenced that has found such rank development in the Church of the Rome, where it began in the very age of the apostles when the primitive church was in its flower, when the glorious fruits of the Pentecost were everywhere to be seen, when the martyrs were sealing their testimony for the truth with their blood. Even then, when the gospel alone so brightly shone so brightly, the spirit of Elohim bore this clear and distinct testimony by the Paul for the mysteries of iniquity that already worked. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 verse 7. That system of the iniquity which then began, it was divinely foretold, was the issue in a portentous apostasy that in the due time would be awfully revealed and would continue until it should be destroyed. Okay. Now, what does it say in Daniel 7:26? That the saints were raised in the time that came, that the saints possessed the kingdom. In Daniel 7:22, and what was the reason? To take away his dominion, to consume and destroy until the end. Well, this is where we're coming to, folks. The saints taking the kingdom now, to consume and destroy this system until the end. And here Alexander Hitchcock, way back in 1858, is bringing this information out. By the breath of the Yahshua's mouth, and consumed by the brightness of his coming. But at his first introduction to the church, it came in secretly and by stealth, with all deceivableness of unrighteousness. It wrought mysteriously under the fair but false pretenses, leading men away from the simplicity of the truth as it is in the Yahshua. And it did so secretly for the very same reason that idolatry was secretly introduced in the ancient mysteries of Babylon. And so, Brother Johnson and Laura May's wife, they conspired, collaborated to indulge in these secret mysteries of Babylon. It says so. For the same reason that idolatry was secretly introduced into the ancient mysteries of Babylon. Well, guess what? It came in openly into the Adventist Church. Adventist Church started out pure in 1844. They started out with a pure doctrine. They started out pure. They didn't have any of these problems. All the people that wouldn't come on from the Millerites with and continue on with the Adventists, it says Babylon was fallen. Well, why did the prophecy point out that in 1844 that Babylon had fallen with the leaving behind of the Millerite movement? Because they were still in Babylon, they were trying to come out of Babylon, and they thought they were going to come right out of Babylon and go right into heaven. Okay? But that wasn't the way it worked. So the Adventists started off with a pure doctrine. Okay? And then they had to be go through the process of purification over the years to make a higher step. And so they were given a 40-year period from 1850 to 1890 to make a step higher in doctrine. And we know what happened. They didn't do it. So Yahweh gave them a 40-year spiritual fast to think it over. And then he raised up Vithyatha for the second feeding pasture with a pure doctrine, just like he raised up the Adventists in 1844 with a pure doctrine. So now here we are again, but this time it's a pure doctrine for Judah. And who represented Judah at the cross? The Pharisees, which were not Judaizers at all. They were from the seed of Ishmael. They were Edomites. But they had usurped the position of the true Hebrew Israelite and taken his throne and sitting upon the throne of David all the time. And they claimed that throne of David was the seed of Moses. It says so there in Matthew 23. It says they sit in the seed of Moses, which was nothing but in their day was the seed of David. So it says, and it did so secretly for the very same reason that idolatry was secretly introduced into the ancient mysteries of Babylon. And so the Adventist Church embraced, that's the first thing, probably the doctrine that they embraced out of Babylon. That's, they got started in 1844, was this. Not knowing that a birthday celebration, celebrating one's own birthday, is your biggest idolatry worship that they have down in Egypt. According to the astrology, what they call the zodiac, the 12 signs of the zodiac in the heavens, the first one, the most important thing, is your birthday celebration, because you got to make yourself a god so you can have self-worship, and we have others worship you as a god on your birthday. That's what it's for. So that's what was happening down at Kermit. That Adventists embraced that ignorantly and practiced it and didn't teach against it, didn't put it out of the church. And so therefore it made its way all the way through the third feeding pasture of Gilead Center, and it had permeated our very fabric of doctrine. And so we have pure doctrine. Brother Johnson was given pure, pure doctrine. And he restored all that pure doctrine in 1970. But the one thing he didn't give up was this practice of idolatry, of self-worship, the birthday. That's one thing he didn't investigate to see if this is good or bad. He didn't want to know, because his wife did not want to give up birthday celebrations and anniversary celebrations and 4th of July celebrations and flag flying day celebrations for our country. They didn't want to give up Thanksgiving. The only thing that they were going to give up was Christmas. And Christmas is nothing but a birthday celebration itself. So it says, it was not safe it was not prudent to do otherwise. The zeal of the true church, though destitute of the civil power, would have aroused itself to put the false system and all its abettors beyond the pale of Christianity if it had appeared openly and all at once in all its grossness, and this would have attested its progress, or arrested its progress. Therefore, it was brought in secretly, and by little and little, one corruption being introduced after another, as apostasy proceeded, and the backsliding church became prepared to tolerate it. So, Advent started this slide on apostasy in 1888 when they rejected Jonathan Wagner, the righteous by faith, and they continued on their slide. They tolerated these here little idols that they had in their church. I mean, you can have more than just birthday celebration. You can have brooches in your hair. You can have brooches on your lapel. You can wear rings, wedding rings or not. That's part of it. Oh, you can just do all kinds of that. You can cut your eyebrows. You can paint your face with rouge and lipstick. And they do that too. And so that's idolatry. So Adventists practice full idolatry. They're evil. They're morally evil today. I mean, for 50 years I witnessed the Adventists having changing wives, having wife swapping in their churches. I met a man that lost his wife through wife swapping in an Adventist church. Met him in an Adventist church. He was so devastated over losing his beautiful wife because he lost his wife over it. She went to the man that she was attracted to, and she stayed with him. And the woman that this other man got didn't stay with him, so he's without a woman in his life. He's lost his wife and his child. And so he come crying to me, "What is the truth? I'm ready to join you," so he joined me. I taught him the truth, and but he got lonely. He wanted to go find him a wife, and so he thought the strict teaching that I had was too strict for him to maintain a celibate life. He couldn't maintain a celibate life and go on with me, so he gave it up, went back, and found him a woman, and moved to another state, and the rest is history. Till it has reached the gigantic heights we now see, when in almost every particular the system of the papacy is a very antipodes of the system of the primitive church, of the gradual introduction of all that is now most characteristic of the Rome, through the work of the mystery of iniquity, we have very strikingly evidence preserved even by Rome itself in the inscriptions copied by the Roman catacomb. So what really constitutes the mystery of iniquity and the mystery of Babylon? What constitutes that? Is to have the doctrines of the sanctuary completely restored unto you, and you restore them like Rhodes did, but you keep on with your idolatrous practices that you had while you were an Adventist. In other words, when you stepped into a higher level, you didn't leave those behind you. You brought them with you. In other words, you brought the Adventist relics with you, which is nothing but the relics of the Catholic Church. That's all amounted to. So Brother Johnson setting up a purified church with a sanctuary system restored all divine ordinances and precepts and statutes and judgments and feast days and everything imaginable, but he brought all of his relics with him from the Adventist church. And I named them to you a while ago what they were. They were even sexual problems that they had and so forth. So Brother Johnson brought all over with him, and he approved of it. and then make any attempt to get rid of all those things out of our midst. And so that's how come he came to his end. Very easy to come to his end. That the ones before him had the same problem. Ben wrote and came to his end. And I'll guarantee you, if Vijayahara had been practicing complete health laws of Moses, he wouldn't have set up that dairy down there on his compound in Waco back in the 30s. And where they had a dairy cattle. They had dairy cows, and they had milk and cheese, and they had butter, and they had eggs, and they had all those dairy products. I don't think they eat any meat, but that's beside the point. They had everything else. And so Yahweh said, I can't use this man to sit at the head of the kingdom and bring forth 140 word God. There's no way. Impossible. He says spiritual Israel's got a long ways to go yet. Well, we're still at that place right now. My wife and I are trying to perfect this health reform thing right here in our home right now to get ready to bring forth this 144,000. It's taken all these years with us, 46 years with us as Gilead Center. And Rod had 40 years. There you are, right there. There's 86 years. And the Adventists had 40 years. Before that, 1890 to 1930. So that makes 126 years. And then the Adventists had 40 years before that. That makes 166 years. 167 years. And we're still looking at the purification by complete health reform and so forth. These catacombs are extensive excavations underground in the neighborhood of Rome, in which the Christians in the times of the persecution during the first 3 centuries celebrated their worship and also buried their dead. On some of the tombstones, there are inscriptions still to be found, which are directly in the teeth of the now well-known principle and practices of Rome. Take only one example. What, for instance, at this day, is a more distinguishing mark of the papacy than the enforced celibacy of the clergy? Yet from these inscriptions, we have most decisive evidence that even in Rome, there was a time when no such system of clerical celibacy was known. Witness the following found on different tombs. Number one, to Basilus, the presbyter, and Philippicus, thus his wife. They made this for themselves. Petronia, P-E-T-R-O-N-I-A, number two, a priest's wife, the type of modesty. In this place, I lay my bones. Spare your tears, dear husband and daughter, and believe it is forbidden to weep for one who lives in God. A prayer here and there for the dead. May Elohim refresh my spirit. Proves that even when then the mystery of iniquity had begun to work, but inscriptions such as the above equally show that it had been slowly and cautiously working. Now, when Gilead Center came to its end, this is the subject that and the scripture that Yahweh gave me down there at Kermit. And I wrote a little tract called "The Man of Sin, Son of Perdition, Who Is He?" And I use this right here, 2 Thessalonians, that's always been quoted in this subject matter, chapter 2, verse 7. It says, "For the mystery of iniquity doth already work, only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way." So he said, this applies to Brother Johnson, And because he's practicing the mystery of iniquity, and he was tested on that when he was asking one day and inquiring what I thought was the reason why they were losing all their blessings. And I said, well, I've got a message from heaven tells me exactly why you're losing all your blessings. He said, well, I want to hear it. He said he wanted to hear it. So I told him what that message was from heaven, why he was losing all his blessings. Well, I said, restore the data. He said, no, we next do that, we get into the land. But you know, what would have happened? Brother Johnson had already restored the daily twice over a period of 33 years. What would have happened if he had repented of that and restored the daily a third time? That practice of idolatry would have had to go out the window, because that was part of the deal. Stop the abominations that you're practicing in the church. I told him what they were. So if he had accepted my message and repented and done what he was told to do, then he would have got rid of those abominations that he was practicing and allowing to be practiced by the members. So this is what the Holy Spirit gave me. He gave me 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 1 through, it's the whole chapter. He said belongs to that situation down at Kermit, Brother Johnson. So this applies 100% to him. And Gilead Center. And I'm going to read it to you. Now we beseech you, brethren, by the coming of our Savior Yahshua the Messiah, and by our gathering together unto him, that ye be not soon shaken in mind, or be troubled, neither by spirit, nor by word, nor by letter, as from us, as that the day of the Yahshua is at hand. Let no man deceive you by any means. For that day shall not come, except there come a falling away first, and that the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. Now, Paul was talking to these Thessalonians in the future tense, because he said this is going to be in the end time. This prophecy is for the end time. And so this is what he was projecting his prophecy to unto our day here in the 12th hour. So in essence, the practice of just the birthdays alone, that's just that one practice was showing respect unto the papal worship. And here in Alexander Hislop, here on Wikipedia, I got it right here in front of me, he said Alexander Hislop, well, first let me finish reading here 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And then I'll read to you about Alexander Hislop. It says in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3, let no man deceive you by any means. Now, it's talking to the people here at this time, here in the 12th hour. That's approaching the 12th hour. It's talking to the people of the 11th hour at Gilead Center. This is what this message is directed to. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. So it turned out that since this prophecy was directly for Brother Study Johnson, because he was fulfilling every aspect of this prophecy, so we put his name on it, Yahweh put his name on it, heaven put his name on it. And he says this Brother Johnson, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called Yahweh, and it says, call Yahweh. Well, Yahweh don't take, you don't call him all of these things. But when you put the preposition in there, and the prepositional phrase, it says, who opposes, Brother Johnson opposes, and exalts himself above all that is called of the Yahweh. Well, see, I was called of the Yahweh. I was there giving him a message from heaven. But he had exalted himself above me and everybody else that had a message from heaven. So that was of the Yahweh. So he exalted himself above all the messages and the warnings and the counsel given to him from heaven, because they were of the Yahweh. And that's what I told him, that my message from heaven was of the Yahweh. Well, that is worship, so that he as the Yahweh sitteth in the temple of Yahweh, showing himself that he is Yahweh. And lo and behold, Brother Johnson ended up saying, I just woke up and discovered that I am the Messiah. I'm the antitypical Messiah. And Jesus is very God in his mind, so who did Brother Johnson then, what was he thinking? Satan had really tricked him real good. He'd become his own God, equal to Yahweh. So he put his own interpretation on all the prophecy that he didn't understand the true interpretation on. He went and ventured so far as to put his own on it. And that's blasphemy, folks. Remember, ye not, that when I was yet with you, I told you these things, and now you know what withholdeth, that he might be revealed in his time. For the mystery of iniquity doth already work. Only he who now letteth will let until he be taken out of the way. So wherever the mystery of iniquity is, whoever it is working with today, it's going to work, and he's going to let it work until he be taken out of the way. He always raised up this Donald Trump, and Donald Trump is raised up for one main reason. That to take these here people out of the way that are practicing this mystery of iniquity. Okay? And then shall that wicked be revealed. Well, actually, it should have put the word in there again. That wicked one. It didn't put that in there, but it said, and then shall that wicked one, Vernus W. Johnson, the man of sin, the son of perdition, has already been, had his nakedness uncovered, has been revealed, and now he is on display of the world to be seen for what he is, just like Obama, the son of perdition, there in Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, is going to be put on the world's display, stripped of their clothing. They're going to be standing there naked before the whole world, and they have without a shoe. And then shall that wicked Brother W. Johnson, the angel of the seventh candlestick that was spewed out, be revealed, whom the Yahshua shall consume with the spirit of his mouth, and shall destroy with the brightness of his coming. So all of these sons of perdition now, Antichrist, which Obama is your number one, Yahshua is fixing to appear in the person again. He's going to spew on Mount Zion as a lamb with the 144,000, Revelation 14:1-5. And Obama's going to send his henchmen there to destroy him and engage him in battle. And Yahshua is going to overcome them. And he says he's going to destroy this leader by the brightness of his coming. Okay. Even him whose coming is after working of Satan, with all power and signs and lying and wonders, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, because they received not the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this cause Elohim shall send them a strong delusion, that they should believe a lie, that they all might be damned who believed not the truth, but had pleasure in the unrighteousness. But we are bound to give thanks always to Elohim for you, brethren, beloved of Yahweh, because Elohim has from the beginning chosen you unto salvation through the sanctification of the Spirit and the belief of the truth. So who is this that he's talking to now? The house of David, the wave sheep offering, that closed out the 11th hour, the sixth seal, the judgment of the dead period with Brother Stephen Johnson at the helm, there come at 2002. Whereunto he called you by our gospel to the obtaining of the glory of our Savior Yahshua the Messiah. So Paul says, hey, he's called you according to by our gospel. The truth that we've been teaching, he called you by that truth. Therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which you have been taught, whether by word or our epistle. Now our Savior Yahshua the Messiah himself and Elohim, even our Father, which has loved us and has given us an everlasting consolation and good hope through grace, comfort your hearts and establish you in every good word and work. Okay. Now we're going to go back to Alexander Hislop. He says, Alexander Hislop was born Duns, D-U-N-S, Berwickshire, 1807. He died Arbroath, 13th of March, 1865. Okay, these are the names of the months in Scottish, what I just read to you. was a Free Church of Scotland minister known for his criticism of the Roman Catholic Church. He was the son of the Stephen Hislop, died 1837, a Mason by occupation and an elder of the Relief Church. Alexander's brother was also named Stephen Hislop, lived 1817 to 1863, and became well known in his time as a missionary to India. And naturalist. Alexander was for a time parish schoolmaster of Wick Catholicness. In 1831 he married Jane Pearson. He was for a time editor of the Scottish Guardian newspaper as a probationary. He joined the Free Church of Scotland at the disruption of 1843. He was ordained in 1844, now here he is, at the beginning when the Adventist was also born at the East Free Church, Arbroath, where he became senior minister in 1864. He died of a paralytic stroke the next year after being ill for about 2 years. He wrote several books, his most famous being The Two Babylons. Papal worship proved to be a worship of Nimrod and his wife. And when I read that, papal worship proved to be the worship of Nimrod and his wife, and Albert told me, as I read that a while ago, he said, Brother Johnson represented Nimrod and his wife represented Semiramis, Lord Johnson. So they were, and said, because by virtue of not giving up their birthday practices, number one, and other things, that constituted papal worship. They was giving allegiance to the papacy, to the Catholic Church, not to the sanctuary system that Brother Johnson had and the law of Moses. He completely, and he's talking about apostatized now. This is what you call apostasy. When Yahweh tells you and gives you the formula for setting up the ordained system of true worship, and he gives you with the true time for publishing a creation calendar, and instead of perfecting the law of Moses and practicing it 100%, he holds on to the papal worship that he already was used to coming out of the Adventist Church, and he continued on with that until it completely eroded the teachings of the law of Moses and the practice of the sanctuary system in its true form. He ended up back practicing papal worship in the place of the true sanctuary worship. That's reading around Matthew 24:14-15 applies here. Stand in the pulpit where you ought not be, the abomination that maketh desolate. Okay, that's what that applies to. Okay, it says this book was initially published, The Two Babylons, by Hislop, in 1853 as a pamphlet, then greatly revised and expanded and released as a book in 1858. In this book, Hislop argued that the Catholic Church was a Babylonian mystery cult and pagan, whereas Protestants worshiped the true Jesus and the true God. He believed that Roman Catholic religious practices are pagan practices grafted onto the true Christianity during the reign of the Constantine. At this point, the merger between the Roman state religion and its adoration of the mother and child was transferred to Christianity, merging Christian characters with pagan mythology. And the birthday celebration was one of those pagans, mythology that was transferred to the Protestant churches. The goddesses was renamed Mary, and Jesus was renamed Jupiter Pure or Jupiter the Boy. Hislop believed that the goddess in Rome called Venus or Fortuna was the Roman name of the more ancient Babylonian cult of Ishtar, whose origin began with a blonde-haired and blue-eyed woman named Semiramis. And what do we have today? Hillary Clinton is a blonde-headed. She's a blonde-headed, blue-eyed. She's a blonde-headed, blue-eyed Semiramis, antithetical Semiramis. Mr. Bevan, according to his thought, Semiramis was an exceedingly beautiful woman who gave birth to a son named Tammuz, was instrumental as the queen and wife of Nimrod, the founder of Babylon and its religion, complete with a pseudo-virgin birth. Later, Nimrod was killed, and Semiramis, pregnant with his child, claimed the child was Nimrod reborn. Hislop attempted to show that the cult and worship of Semiramis spread globally, her name changing with the culture. In Egypt, she was Isis. I-S-I-S. Where do we have that Isis today? Islamic State? Okay. That's where your Isis was first born. In Greece and Rome, she was called Venus. And where did Isis get its start today, in our day? Right there in Greece, right there in Turkey, right there in that part of the world. And who gave their start? Hillary Clinton. She was the Secretary of State. She was the one that was leading our armed forces there in the Middle East at the time that this Isis was set up in our day. And she was the number one that orchestrated the setting up Isis and destroying all those that stood in this way, including our own people. And that's what the whole battle is all about today. Hislop attempted to show that the cult and worship of Semiramis spread globally, her name changing with the culture. In Egypt, she was Isis. In Greece and Rome, she was called Venus, Diana, Athena, and a host of other names, but was always prayed to and central to the faith, which was based on Babylonian mystery religion. And who is that that they pray to today now? This Isis, this Diana and Athena. That is your mystery goddess, which is Allah. Now keep in mind that Allah is a goddess, not a god. In the Quran, they have it, they say that she is a female Holy Spirit. It is a female, this Allah that the Muslims worship, the Arab world bows down to. This is what they call mystery Baba and religion, according to Islam. Constantine, though, claiming to convert to Christianity, remained pagan, but renamed the gods and goddesses with Christian names to merge the two faiths for his political advantage. Constantine's endorsement of the tradition was a turning point for early Christianity. In 313, Constantine issued the Edict of Milan, legalizing Christian worship. The emperor became a great patron of the church and set a precedent for the position of the Christian emperors within the church and the notion of orthodoxy, Christendom, and ecumenical council that would be followed for centuries as the state church of the Roman Empire. This is where we evolve right back to again, repeated this very thing. It's just not now. It's been set up with Hillary Rodham Clinton, the female, the antitypical Semiramis. You have Obama as the antitypical Nimrod. You've got all your players. You've got Donald Trump as your antitypical Cyrus. And he is now looking for a vice president. He's talking to a retired general. And who was Darius? He was a general that led Cyrus' army, and Cyrus picked him to be the head of his army. A general. And who is and it says it looks like Donald Trump may very well pick this retired general that has already seen action in the war in the Middle East. He knows the thinking of the enemy, and he knows how to defend against it. He knows how to choose the best way to approach and defeat them. And so Donald Trump looks like he's very well going to pick this man to be his vice president after all. This brings the third of our step. This hour, you can contact us at the 11th hour call on number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close that with a song. And if our step this hour contact us, as I said, we're going to close the service now with a song entitled "Let the Heavenly Light Shine Through" by the Elijah Davis. Well, you would not have known about how wonderful you are if you hadn't created you. Wouldn't not have known about his best creation and know the nature of you. We're going to run y'all, remember to pray, let the heavenly light shine through. And y'all, when it's mercy, when it comes. again of heavenly home for thee. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And God and mercy will come again of heavenly home for thee. Let the heavenly light shine through. There would not have been a creation of earth if Yah had not come down. All creation heard and the world spread its wings around. There is hope, there is birth, and the Lord appeared. He divided it from the night. And Yah saw that his work was good, created by his mind. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And Yah in his mercy when he comes, he then will have a heavenly home for you. I'm for a mountain, you look around in the green valley below. There's a moon up above that's shining with love. There's a peaceful river that flows. There's the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and all that heaven can spare. And I think that this is just a glimpse of what's awaiting over there. Let the heavenly light shine through. Let the heavenly light shine through. And Yah will mercy when He comes again to have a heavenly home.